We move to the country presentations, and it is a real pleasure to introduce the program manager from Peru, a country that we learned so much from in the past, and we'd like to continue to learn from. And the floor is to Mr. Cesar Bonilla from Peru.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning. In 1990, only 25% of the services of the Ministry of Health of Peru conducted TB diagnostic and treatment activities. Today, 107% of them ensure access to free diagnosis and treatment under the DOTS strategy. Our management model is based on the application of new public health paradigms, allowing the National Tuberculosis Control Program to be incorporated into the system, thus strengthening the response of the country to the disease, and at the same time allowing for new strategic partnerships be built. The new paradigms propose to combine knowledge and creativity by strengthening strategic partnerships. This is the new challenge. In the 80s, serious organizational, structural, and logistic problems did not allow appropriate case detection and access to free treatment for all of the diagnosed TB patients. Only 50% were receiving anti-TB treatment. The high proportion of treatment failures and defaults made the situation worse. In the last 15 years, significant changes in the operational world for the effective control of tuberculosis have taken place, requiring the involvement of experienced professionals and technical experts in the field, improve the knowledge and skills of healthcare workers at health facilities, generating commitment to create a new culture in the quality of care. Many years have gone by since the reorganization of the TB control program in Peru was introduced in the early 90s and successfully implemented the DOTS strategy. The World Health Organization considered DOTS implementation in Peru as one of the most successful in the world. This great effort enabled morbidity rates to decrease in about 5% a year. The case direct detection of more than 70% of smear positive cases among the population, and the cure rate of more than 90% of all new smear positive cases that receive treatment. Under the context of political changes in Peru and the implementation of the health sector reform, a gradual decrease in the identification of symptomatic respiratory patients was observed in the 2001-2003 period, making the decrease in the rates no longer valid. Frequent changes of heads of the program have impaired sustainable TB control actions. A diagnostic gap emerged in this period, and around 12,000 smear positive pulmonary TB cases failed to be diagnosed. TB experts have not yet reached an agreement regarding the magnitude of the MDR-TB epidemic in Peru. where the DOT strategy serves as a model to other countries in the world. Peru was one of the first countries to implement a DOT Plus project in 1997, which was approved by the Green Light Committee in the year 2000. The presence of MDR-TB within any community is the result of some imperceptible gaps in the health systems that are not filled on time and results in these kinds of problems. Ineffective MDR-TB treatment regimes lead to increased resistance and therefore the need of multiple drug regimes. Persistence of MDR-TB cases in the community without timely access to appropriate treatment results in the persistence of sources of transmission. Inadequate therapy or underestimation of the magnitude of MDR-TB does not allow implementing adequate intervention. The new trends require the managers in the field of the TB to have not only the operational technical knowledge, but also full understanding of innovative strategic thinking communication, research and social marketing in a context of ethics and human rights. The century has brought a change in public health paradigms in Peru in relation to TB management basic tools, evaluation, monitoring and control, and taking into consideration of these four dimensions, epidemiology, operations, public health, and management. Under the DOTS framework, this change enabled the management capabilities by encouraging intra and interinstitutional coordination, optimizing control plans, and avoiding duplication and overlapping of activities, strengthening teamwork to achieve efficiency and continuous improvement in order to obtain quality results. In 2004, the National TB Control Program was strengthened by four functional pillars: coordination, management, communication, and cooperation, which all share the responsibilities of management leadership and accountability. Something very important is the technical committee composed of agencies of the Ministry of Health in charge of ensuring the functioning of the TB program. For example, financing, logistics, fundraisers, etc. Also, an advisory committee was created composed of non-governmental organizations, technical and financial institutions, scientific associations, academic institutions, and TB patient organizations. However, I don't want to neglect to mention the role of external financial sources. We believe that the Global Fund project in Peru will continue to strengthen the national TB program, allowing the rapid adaptation to changes resulting from health sector reform. This will convert reform into an opportunity for further development of the national TB program. In the policy guidelines of the health sector for 2002-2012, the high prevalence of infectious diseases is identified as a critical issue, and the decrease in the associated morbidity and mortality rates is considered a strategic goal. The National TB Control Program uses these guidelines to define its plans of actions. Due to the multiple causes injuring to the disease, both the civil society and the Ministry of Health have joined efforts to work as a team by sharing leadership and responsibility and integrating activities under a new organizational culture. The development of intersectorial and interinstitutional actions and the strengthening of a strategic partnership have brought encouraging results through the articulation of social networks at various institutional, community, or individual levels. With the establishment of the ever-changing coordination with other state sectors, such as civil society institutions and organizations of people living with TB, the intersectoriality principle has been introduced into the TB control plans. However, the strengthening process still needs to be sustained. Because of this approach, the National TB Control Program has attained greater political commitment not only from the Ministry of Health, but from other ministries such as Justice, Internal Affairs, Education, among others. However, the competencies of the national level still need to be transferred to the regional and local level. The Greek philosopher Seneca said, "If a man knows not what harbor he seeks, any wind is the right wind." We prepare a strategic plan. It is important to have a shared vision and mission, clear goals and objectives, technical standards and clinical healthcare guidelines. The National Stop TB Committee is now up and running. At present, we also have three regional Stop TB committees. Our friends Leo Blanc from the World Health Organization and Mirta del Granado from the Pan American Health Organization, among others, are closely following the progress made in Peru. Now, let me show you some at outcomes resulting from these interventions. A 16% increase in the identification of symptomatic respiratory cases in 2005. The reform ...96% of TB detection in the community. As a result of improved work practice since 2004, we now have a more exact estimate of the total number of TB cases, showing an increase in the rates of morbidity and incidence of smear-positive pulmonary TB. We hope to continue these efforts in 2006 and by 2007, start observing a decrease similar to that experienced in the 90s of 5% yearly. 90% efficiency in treatment. 98% of MDR-TB cases are found in Lima and 10 other regions located mostly along the coast. 84% of those cases are in Lima. Within the capital, MDR-TB is distributed mostly in 10 districts. This information allows us to redirect our interventions and allocate resources in a more efficient manner. By improving our diagnostic capacity for MDR-TB, we can offer timely treatment which will ultimately impact mortality rates. Our estimates indicate that in 2005, we achieved the highest peak of cases, and by 2006, our projections are showing a decreased trend. The standardized retreatment regime was used during 1997 to 2001. Before having access of this treatment, patients received on average three first-line treatments. This percentage of bacteriological conversion by the 6 months of treatment was 24, while a similar cure rate at the end of the treatment. In 2002-2004, the indication for a standardized regime were changed, and this treatment was recommended only for failures to the primary regime. However, the rate of bacteriological conversion at the 6 months of the cure rate upon termination of treatment remained almost the same. In 2005 to 2006, the MDR-TB treatment regime was modified by adding two second-line drugs. After initiating a standardized regimen and then upon receiving the DST results, beginning an individualized treatment, the bacteriological conversion after 6 months was 94%. These results are being analyzed to determine their exact implications. In the last 50 years, the average budget allocated by the state to the National TB Control Program was $3 million per year. In 2006, this was raised to almost $10 million. Can we say this is a political commitment? This slide speaks for itself. The reform offers new concepts that will create new opportunities for national TB control programs. When the national TB control program has a strong DOTS strategy, it can quickly adapt to the health reform changes. Many lessons have been learned in TB control. However, it is necessary to critically analyze this experience, and as we look to the future, consider the response of the state, of the civil society, and of the people with TB. The civil society has helped make TB control a priority in the public agenda of the state, the central government, and the regional and local government as well. The priority is set in the context of consideration for the dignity of people with TB, of human rights, and of the quality, equity, and access to care at all health centers. The question is, how do we confront TB control in the context of the epidemiological and operational aims within the Millennium Development Goals that address poverty, exclusion, respect for the dignity of patients, and of human rights? Our country is trying to find the answer to this question using these approaches. Incorporating new indicators of TB control will allow us to integrate operational, epidemiological, and public health management. An integral approach to the application of dose expansion contributes to TB control through considering high vulnerability areas with high risk of transmission, TB and HIV co-infection, MDR-TB, and XDR-TB. This lecture is PPN, PAL, advocacy, social mobilization, and communication. Tuberculosis is an old disease, but a modern as a well. It is democratic and can affect anyone in any place. And in the modern age of globalization, tuberculosis is a global concern. In this respect, confront tuberculosis, individual countries and the global community must have a Stop TB strategy that 1. Strengthens the basic foundation of public health. 2. Has a strong effective DOTS strategy, and 3. Encourages strategic partnerships. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bonilla, for this fresh approach and inspiring approach to TB control that and that controlling the disease is one thing, but then to sustain it or regroup the control effort is a totally different thing. Very inspiring. I will allow for one question with the eye on time. Is there anybody who would like? Well, you have been very clear. Thank you very much. We move on, and the next presentation will be from Myanmar, and I'd like to invite Dr. Win Maung to present his presentation.
Good morning, or good noon, or good afternoon for all of our our colleagues. I'm from Myanmar, and I would like to present the planning in line with the Stop TB strategy and the global plan to stop TB 2006-2015. Now, okay. our Myanmar is surrounded by the China, India, Bangladesh, Laos, and Thailand. Our population is about 51.4 million for 2005, and our country is in low income levels. Our national TB program detected more than 100,000 TB cases in 2005, and HIV prevalence in the general population is estimated at 1.3%, and HIV prevalence among adult TB patients is estimated as 7.1%. And our nationwide drug resistance survey done in 2002 and 2003, which showed that in the new cases, MDR-TB is 4%, and in retreatment cases, MDR-TB is about 15.5%. And our Myanmar started the Sopcook chemotherapy in 1994 with the only 18 townships. In our country, there are 325 townships. And we started in 1997 with DOT strategy. In those days, our country implemented DOT strategy in 152 townships. That is less than dog coverage is 50%. In 2003, our gradually expand our dot expansion, and in 2003 November, we can cover the whole country, 325 townships. And as you see in our line, in 2005, our case detection rate is 95%, and the treatment success rate is 84%. And our treatment success rate since 1997-1998 to the 2004, our treatment success rate is static in line with the 82%. In 2005, it rose up to the 84%. And progress in the TB control from 2001 to 2004 is our decentralization of students via microscopy and student collection point in the rural area, and the establishment of the national TB reference laboratory in 2001, and public-private mixed pilot site with the NGOs, and start of global drug facility supported since the 2002. And 2002 and 2004, we have the Extranet ratio review mission is done. And the start of Extranet quality assurance for laboratory. And the first nationwide drug resistance survey in 2002 and 2003. I had already mentioned it. And the progress in TB control in 2005 is that we have developed a 5-year national strategy plan in 2005, and our ministry had approved it. And we draw this 5-year national strategy plan in line with short TB strategy and global TB plan. and with the MADI partners. And our public primary mix operational guideline is published, and DBHIV treatment guideline published in 2005, and Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria grant is we implemented since January 1st too. Although the Global Fund is terminated, but we have the opportunity to implement our activity in the face of plan up to the October 21st. But although we can get opportunity, we can the Global Fund of like our funny, and we can continue our activity up to end of the November. So that is the Global Fund system is one of, I think, the case treatment success rate rose up from 82% to 84% is the one of the system of the Global Fund. However, however the Global Fund terminate abruptly, we thank Global Fund. And integrated HIV care for TB patients with the assistance of the union and the WHO started in 2005 May in the Manly Five Township, and two additional TB HIV pilot sites established and TB HIV surveillance in five sites, and in future HIV prevalence among TB patients is in the routine survey of the National AIDS Program Surveys. That is show that in the Manly, that is the HIV among TB patients is 32. In the, that is the that is the Michina is the 15% and Tawny is 25%. And TB cases undertaking voluntary counseling testing is in Manly is 62%, in the Michina is 52%, and in the county is 34%. And Global Drug Facility awarded us with the second CDR grant in 2008. And the progress in TB control in 2006. And we have the new three disease fund established to fight TB, HIV, and malaria. Totally for three disease, 99.5 million for 5 years. And human resource development plans is launched. TB HIV initiated officially launched, and drug resistant TB committee established to develop national guidelines to treat the drug resistant TB. Private GB trained by our National TB Control Program, our Myanmar Medical Association, JICA, and PSI on PBN DOS. Establishment of external quality assurance, adequate quality control of AFV, and approval of the Fidelity project in the one division of the second division to implement in hard to reach area, and the annual Global Drug Facility review in the 2006. And that is in the with the Global Fund, we can train the staff trained in 2006 is in the 17% of the basic staff are 17% of we targeted is we 70% we can train the targeted of the BHS. And TMO and TB coordinator is 81%, and top provider is 7%, and the lab technician is 46%. So the rest we will be trained. We hope that with the assistance of all the three disease fund or the bridge funding. And TB prevalence survey in Yangon division is finalized in the 2006, and we found that the 50% or half of the TB patients are underdosed, and 1/4 is under the private sector or the GP, and 1/4 is they are the hidden case. They don't know where they go, and they don't see that. The survey is highlights to me or to us how which area is we must be highlighted and give our effort. Planning for TB control for 2006 and 2010. 2005, in 2005, we have the 5-year national strategic plan for TB control, which we have already mentioned. And then we developed a 3-year operational plan for three disease fund, based on our national strategic plan, which includes the bridge fund. The bridge fund means when the global fund is terminated in the 21st August 2006. And the relief fund will come, but we don't know when we will start. And so the in between that we need the bridge fund. So that in the 3D fund that we propose the bridge fund. And it includes the design to help mobilize funding from the new 3D fund, include activity implemented by our national TV program and activity implemented by our 11 partner INGO and our NGO. All works to develop this plan facilitated by the use of new ratio 2, which is designed to help planning and budgeting in line with the global plan and stop TV strategy at country level. The budget for operational plan or activities, in the, that is for the year one, is, that is available budget for the first line draft, and that is for the our staff, and that is for the program management and supervision like that. That is for the 3 year our operational plan. Oh, that is the funding available and the funding gas. For the year one, the, our available money funding is 7.5 million and our funding cap is 5.5. For the year two, our funding availability is 3.9 and the cap is 10.2. That is why that we cannot know all the our international NGO, they don't know how many funds will come to them, so that we cannot include their the international NGO fund in this. It's on year two and year three, so that funding cap is high. And this figure includes all partner of national and international NGO, Union, JICA, JADA, Fidelis, and Global Drug Facility, WHO, and that is, we hope that 3D fund. Major planned activities and challenges for the Stock TV strategies. Therefore, the Stock TV strategy, high quality dot expansion and enhancement. So, we decentralized dot to the Rural Health Center, and we revised national TV guideline, and we mobilized the team for the remote and hard to reach area behind the, our mobile team, and the, we consider childhood TV guideline to develop. And our the challenge is easily access of patient to dot service and resource mobilization for first line drug for up to the 2008 after Global Drug Facility second grant expired. That is maybe our challenge. The stock TV strategy component two, TV HIV, MDR TV and other challenges. We are the scaling up of the collaborated TV HIV prevented and control activity and TV HIV and MDR TV guideline we will develop in near future. Integration of TV and HIV surveillance and our HIV prevalent among TV patient surveillance will be included in the National AIDS Program Routine Surveillance System. And Greenlight Committee application for the MDR TV treatment project, we will be start and the one is part from the radio headquarter will come in near future in Myanmar to establish the guideline and for the application of the green light committee. And establishment of drug resistance test, drug sensitivity test capacity at sub-national level. In our country, there is only two facilities, one in Yangon and one in Manila for the culture facility and the only one drug sensitivity or drug sensitive testing facility only in the Yangon. So now we can establish sub-national level, one sub-national level in Manila division. And second national drug resistance survey will be done in the 2007. Our challenges may be the relatively high drug resistance level. I have already mentioned in the in the past, and limited capacity to diagnose and management of the MDR-TB. That is our challenges for TB, HIV, MDR-TB, and other challenges. And the short strategy component two, health system strengthening. Training goals for the health staff at all levels, including leadership training, logistic management, budgets, and planning. In 2006, external review mission were come to our country, and the challenge is the limited human resource with the necessary competency at the periphery level. And the short TV strategy, another one is engage all care providers. Scaling up for public-private mixed and the public-public mixed activity, including integration of major public hospital and the prison. The challenge is maintain quality or during scaling up of PBN dots. And scaling up of PBN dot activity, including integration of major public hospital and the prison. Our activity, we were planned to give training in the GP, training to the private laboratory, and training to public hospital and the township covers. We are planned like this for engage all care providers. And another TB stop strategy is empowering people with the TB and community. Our major activity planned is the KAB survey. We were two KAB survey, and then we developed the ACSM strategy and implementation of the Fidelity project for hard to reach population in one division in Myanmar. And our challenge is expand self-income generation, scaling up our community care strategy, and improving community awareness TB program. And another strategy is enable and promote research. National prevalence survey. Now we are conducted the Yangon division TB prevalence survey only, and so that we want to know about our TB situation, where we are, so that we want to do national prevalence survey. And number two is maintaining the partnership with the researcher and academic institutions. And that is the ratio planning and budgets too. This is a very comprehensive and easy to use, and requirement of gap can easily be identified. Now each figure is directly linked with the funding gaps and graph. It can give the ratio report in time and promote standardized approach by all partners or the development of joint operational plans and all major funding, the proposal. And that is like Excel budget sheet, so that we can see the separately and clearly and easily. But when we are already developed the 5-year national strategy plan, we can get the ratio planning and budget too is a little bit late. In future, that is easy to update and revise the data. Data are entered in Excel and calculation are automatically updated when data are changed, useful when funding is delayed and activities are postponed. In our conclusion, number one is stop TB partnership in Myanmar is moving towards global TB control target despite the very limited resources, and thanks to our high political commitment, dedicated our staff and strong community support, excellent coordinating with our partners, and continued ratio technical assistance. And number two is the urgent additional resources mobilization is necessary to build on the three disease fund mechanism supported by the TFID, European Community, and Australia, and Norway, Sweden, and Netherlands government to fully cover our program needs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Minh Maung, for presentation of the solid work and planning in Myanmar. Is there any question? I will allow for one. Yeah.
Thank you very much for your presentation. My name is Joost van der Meer. I am representing AIDS Foundation East West. We work in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, and there the epidemic is a bit similar in your country in that I believe your country has also a high number of HIV infected people who are infected through injecting drug use. Am I right?
Yes. And now there is not so many.
But you have quite a number of injecting drug users who are infected with HIV. Is that right? Or not? Because otherwise my question is irrelevant.
In our country, the HIV positive man is the sexually transmitted.
Mostly sexually transmitted.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, then I will leave my question. Because
okay.
Yes. Because they use the disposable, maybe it's yes.
Okay, let me just tell my question. Do you have any TB services directed at injecting drug users, especially as a vulnerable group?
Yes, but as I am the TB program manager, these questions should be asked to the National AIDS program manager.
See, that's the problem.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much again, Dr. Imam. We have two exciting subjects ahead of us, one on MDR-TB control in the Philippines and one on TB-HIV activities in Kenya. I think that's the heart of the new Stop TB strategy, and it's a pleasure to call on Rosalind again to present us the experience in the Philippines.
Okay, thank you again. I assure you that in spite of the long talks of MDR and XDR this morning, what I have is just purely common colds. Okay, so regarding the scale-up of multidrug-resistant TB management in the Philippines, allow me to give you first the magnitude of MDR-TB in the Philippines based on these two important data sources. In 1997, a Philippine National Survey conducted by Tupasi et al. showed that resistance among new cases was 1.4%, but it was quite alarmingly high among the previously treated at 14.5%. And in the current National Drug Resistance Survey of the NTP, WHO, JICA, which is still a preliminary report or still an official report, you can see that the type of resistance among new cases has increased to 4.4% and more so with the previously treated at 21%. This is an analysis of the treatment failure rates among the smear positives based on the National TB Program report since 1999 up to 2003. Among the new, it's fairly stable at 1.3 to 2%, but in the retreatment cases, although we don't have previous data on this, the 2003 revealed that there's a high treatment failure rate among the smear positive cases registering at 6%. In one of the DOT center in Metro Manila, a privately initiated public-private mixed DOT center, which is that of the DOT center at Makati Medical Center, the rates of treatment failure from 1999 up to 2003 showed that they were really quite high in terms of resistance, in terms rather of failure rates among the retreatment cases, ranging from as high as 22.2% to as low as 6.7%. Nonetheless, with this data, it turned out that all of these failure rates actually became multidrug resistant TB cases. So what does this say to us? It simply means that we need to go into analyzing the picture of MDR-TB in the country. And when we did that, we simply went into a stage of going beyond what we call as DOTS, labeling it as simply DOTS plus. So the first stage of the PMTM in the Philippines was actually termed as the pilot stage, in which the scope and context was based really on a project scheme. And it's actually one of the GLC pilot projects in which the Philippines has had, with the Makati Medical Center then being the starting point. So as I said, the MMC is a privately initiated DOTS unit, and it became the starting point for all these DOTS plus activities. It was also found out that 75% of referrals actually came from the private practitioners, which means that there's a need to harness private partnerships into DOTS because they're the ones actually referring or creating or generating these MDRs. Laboratory capacity for culture and DST was then started also on a project basis, and it was found out that second-line drugs, need to be secured and assured once you go into DOTS Plus, so that the impending concern at that time was really sustainability. The second stage went into the stage of mainstream. Stage of mainstream simply means the integration of DOTS Plus into the public DOTS, and in order for us to undertake such process, it has to be done on a strategic process, or what we call as a stepwise implementation. I won't go into that process anymore, but I'd like to mention that with that stage of mainstream, the Lung Center of the Philippines DOTS Plus project was born, and this is more of a public counterpart, a public counterpart from the DOH, which actually does not look into OPD cases, but also looks into in-house services for MDR-TB cases. Referrals at that time came from both public and private doctors, and what we have seen in terms of mainstream is the need to approach it on a community base, simply stating that there's a need to decentralize to public health centers the management of MDR-TB with participation from trained community volunteers. Even with the mainstream, there was a prevailing concern, of course, of absorptive capacity. So this is a picture of how we decentralize MDR-TB services in Metro Manila. This is the first stage or the pilot, which is the Makati Medical Center. It went on to engage other public facilities, one in Lung Center of the Philippines and the other one in Kasaka. So in this regard, we have seen that as far as treatment center is concerned, we have started up building another treatment center in these two nearby areas. But when it comes to involvement or engagement of public health centers, it was rather low at only 11% of them being engaged into the system. This is also another slide, this map showing the different cases in Metro Manila, where they are coming from within the region of NCR, and you can see the high percentages scattered all over Metro Manila. Of course, the Metro Manila is the biggest region in the country. And what is also significant at the time is the fact that outside Metro Manila, we're also seeing MDR-TB cases. So in spite of the fact that Metro Manila houses most of our TB cases, we're seeing also cases of MDRs outside that of this populous region. This is the graph showing the accruals of the TB patients from 1999 up to August 2006. And these green bars or green boxes show to us the different fund sources that we have gotten from to support MDR-TB management. Initially, it was on a pilot basis. It's largely a private-initiated support. But of course, with the mainstream, there is now the involvement of government support through the Department of Health. But in here, largely, the mainstream has been contributed by external support, largely coming from Global Fund. Just a picture of the demographics of those cases, with males being more preponderant than the females, and majority of the cases occur really in the economically productive age group. So the treatment outcomes of those cases revealed that in terms of cure rate, there was really an increase now of cure rates from 59 to 73 to 74% among these MDR-TB cases. But what is also next to be seen is how we can address these problems of high defaulters at 25%, 13.5%, and even at 15%. So just a table of that previous slide, seeing here that there is already high cure rate from 73% up to 74%. So we go into the third stage, and we actually label it as the stage of scale-up. Simply stating, it simply means the expansion of project into program. In fact, we have even recoined the word of DOTS Plus project into a PMTM or a programmatic multi-drug TB resistant management, or because it's now expanded or into the program aspect or into the program scope. Geographically, there's also expansion in which we're now going to saturate at least Metro Manila and expand it throughout the entire region of Metro Manila. But of course, in the future, looking into another possible region, because as I've said, we are seeing cases outside of this big region. What is also important in the scale-up is that we need to engage now more community-based facilities, and with the advent of PPMD units, these units may be considered as potentials for engagement. We're also looking into DOTS hospitals or hospitals that underdoing DOTS, such as the district hospitals in the country. And of course, more importantly, are those public health centers having good performances on the OTS. A more decentralized approach, we believe, is realistic and more viable because it's actually anchored on the country situation. However, the issue here perhaps would be the added complexity in terms of engaging communities, in terms of expanding geographically, plus, of course, the need for more financial demands. So this is the picture of Metro Manila. In 2006, we only have this one culture center, one DST site, and we have only about three treatment centers. Hopefully by 2008, when we go into scale up, you can see that we're going to build up and install more additional treatment centers, more culture centers, and of course, strategically increasing DST centers. By the way, this DST center here in Muntinlupa is actually the National TB Reference Lab of the Philippines, which has been built through the auspices of JICA. So again, a picture of the accruals of these patients, that since it's going to be largely supported by GFATM, particularly in terms of provision of second-line drugs, you can see that we're able to treat at least 3,000 cases with that global fund support. And as I've said earlier, the round two global fund support is actually used in the mainstream, and the round five will be used for scale up. So you can already see a comparison in terms of difference in terms of the cost or in terms of the budget that's entailed under round five and versus that of round two. So again, the picture of how we're going to geographically expand the treatment centers, culture centers, and the DST sites. And hopefully at this last phase, that's where we're going to go outside of Metro Manila. What is important here is that there's an incremental increase of these centers, but strategic enough that we would be able to monitor their performances. So just an evolutionary picture of how we really started with PMPM. This is the PPMD unit at Makati Medical. As I've said, it's a privately initiated PPMD unit with large assistance from the public facility, particularly that of the NPP, in terms of provision of then first-line drugs. Of course, as a DOTS center, its main laboratory service was dealing with microscopy work. When it evolved to become a DOTS Plus unit, the complexity started because aside from microscopy, it has to undertake culture and DST, and aside from doing mere DOTS, it has to perform DOTS Plus services. But of course, still the involvement of the public facility through the NTP in provision of first-line drugs has been there. And you can see here that the number of cases have already increased compared to the previous slide because they're already doing two types of services, DOTS and DOTS Plus. And when we go into mainstream, this is that starting point at Makati Medical. We engage other treatment centers. This one is the public center, which is the Lung Center of the Philippines, and another privately owned DOTS Plus treatment center, the Kasaka. But we have also engaged treatment sites, the purpose of which is really to decentralize management of MDR-TB cases so that they won't be too concentrated or too centralized in this particular facility, because we have seen that really the problem of sustainability and absorptive capacity was then an issue. So we tried to look into these different centers, all of which or majority of which are actually publicly owned centers or facilities. And when we go into scale up, it's just really replicating the practices of those that we have seen in the mainstream, looking into other possible sites that have been strategically analyzed as to where they can be feasible without, of course, compromising quality of our DOT services. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to install 8 treatment centers, 4 culture centers, and 3 DST sites, and of course, more treatment sites, which are community-based facilities. It is important that with the increase in the DST sites, there's still that network of laboratory and there's still that supervision from a supranational reference laboratory. This is the future of another region that we're looking into in terms of going outside Metro Manila or going expanding outside Metro Manila. So just some words regarding this type of PMPM facilities that we have been using under the policies. We have the so-called treatment centers, which are actually treating more than 10 patients being treated at a time. It's a more comprehensive and specialized management being delivered here at this level. Examples are the Lung Center and the Kasaka that we have at QI. A treatment site is a facility that handles lesser or fewer patients, less than 10 being treated at a time, and it's largely represented by the public sectors, public health centers, the PPMD units that we have installed, other public facilities, and we can see that you have also engaged faith-based DOTS units because we have seen that they are also doing or performing quality DOTS. As for the laboratory side, culture centers are those centers that will perform culture services, and that the NTRL, being a culture center by itself, still needs to supervise the external quality assurance on microscopy of our laboratory or microscopy centers. It will be having a broader catchment of areas because it has to service outside of its own locality. So it has to service or accept culture services that is outside its current locale. Excuse me. And those identified under the drug resistance survey, we have these facilities that we have identified to be potentials for culture centers such as the Cebu Reference Lab will be definitely used for this scaling up. As for the DST site, of course, the main role of a DST site is to perform the DST, and again, NTRL being also a DST site, will still need to continue to oversee quality of microscopy, quality of culture. So it does not supersede the current function of NTRL being the national TB reference lab of the country once it has become a DST site. It's still going to oversee those key important laboratories of culture and microscopy. They may be fewer. DST sites are, of course, fewer, but as I've said, they have to be strategically located so that they can cater to better access and to better coverage within the entire map of the Philippines. And, of course, DST sites will always have to be supervised or needs to be supervised by a supranational laboratory, which in our case for the NTRL, it's supervised by RIT in Japan. So the lesson here is that DOTS is still the overarching framework. Even if we go into DOTS Plus, we still have to consider that DOTS will be the overarching framework. Nonetheless, we can translate these different elements of DOTS into corresponding statements such as this that looks into how we can still deliver DOTS Plus, but on the framework of DOTS. I won't go into the details, but the point here I'd like to mention is that we have to translate these elements of DOTS into elements of DOTS Plus or PMTM so that in the context of implementation, it's still DOTS that's the overarching framework. So what were then the steps and requirements for the scale-up? There's a need first to environmentally scan your area, the area, because there's a need to determine or to define where the existing resources are and capacities are. And as I've said earlier, since we had the conduct of the drug resistance survey, we have already existing resources and capacities that we have built in some areas. It is also necessary because we need to strategically select our expansion sites. Unlike DOTS, we gradually expand the DOTS, but for DOTS Plus, there's a set of criteria that we need to undertake so that we'll be able to see where these critical expansion sites will be. Second is the advocacy to ensure political commitment. In here, although the Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, has been signed a few weeks ago with the Metro Manila local chief executives, we'd also like to mention that advocacy needs to be elevated to the higher level, specifically to the ministerial level. And we're finalizing the policies on this that we're going to have it endorsed by the secretary himself so that there's going to be an assurance of political commitment. Third, you have to create essential organizational structures. In the Philippines, we've seen that the importance of having task forces for management of PMTM, the need for consilium, which looks into the clinical aspect of making diagnosis, and of course, the laboratory subcommittee that looks into the articulation of microscopy, culture, and DST all at the same time, and looking, of course, into its quality. Fourth, we need to have some policies, guidelines, and standards development that should be anchored to country situation. There are a lot of materials internationally, but we need to look into what will be adaptable to the country situation, especially that we have already made some pilot tests and gathered the results or the best practices from these pilot tests to come up with our policies, guidelines, and standards. Human resource development is an impending issue for scale-up. So with that being said, we have to make some task analysis first of the key people who will be involved in this undertaking. And we have to develop standardized training materials so that in the rollout of implementation and training, we already have made these training materials standardized and easier for replication later on. Laboratory, the network of lab services and other diagnostics should be made in place microscopy is still a part of the overall laboratory armamentarium. EQA should be in place because this guard safeguards the quality of all the of the microscopy services, culture, and DST. Of course, the role of X-ray cannot be undermined, especially in the country, in the Philippines. We have already started out with this so-called TB Diagnostic Committee, which is actually a pool of experts that validates or looks into how the smear negative cases can be given a quality diagnosis and at the same time be given judicial chemotherapy. So we'd like to still capitalize on this positive aspect that we have inputted in our TB program. So just a picture of how we're going to decentralize capacity building. If this is the pilot or the starting point of a Makati Medical at the time in which it does all the training, now it will have to decentralize the capacity to engage the regional level for the training of trainers, to engage the province or city levels for training on monitoring and supervision, and of course to engage the most peripheral units as the treatment centers, the so-called treatment centers and treatment sites. This is where the actual implementation will take place. In the same token, once you scale up laboratory capacity, it looks into how you can decentralize culture to involve other key laboratories, particularly reference laboratories, to do EQA, which is done also at the validation centers at the provincial and city level. And of course, microscopy will have to be retained in the DOTS Plus treatment centers. Nonetheless, on top of which is the DST, which is done going to be done by NTRL and other DST sites, and of course still supervised by a supranational laboratory. So logistics, this is again one important aspect for the scale-up of PMTM, because we all know the logistics management of second-line drugs is really a hurdle. It's complex because we're not looking into fix those combinations, we're not looking into TB kits, but we're actually counting individual medicines. So nonetheless, for the management of second-line drugs, we still adopt these four important components of the drug cycle, except that for selection, it will now have to be participated in by the NTP, the TDF. For the procurement, we have to look into other agencies such as the GLC and the WHO assistance for better procurement of our second-line drugs. Distribution will now involve the regional health offices and the LGUs that looks into distribution of the second-line drugs. And of course, utilization will have to be done by treatment centers and treatment sites. Also, for second-line drugs, the first-line drugs will have to be put into place even if we have doing PMTM. And of course, the drugs for adverse reactions are also a requirement. Community involvement. Community participation to facilitate a decentralized approach is very important. And that's the reason why we came up with the so-called terms of treatment centers and treatment sites, which are actually public health centers, PPMD centers, that will deliver the actual services for PMTM. Partnerships, based on previous results, we have seen that private really contribute to the proliferation of MDR-TB. So we need to harness them to the DOT strategy for them to prevent proliferating these unwanted cases of MDR. And engaging them through the public-private mixed DOTS units is a very good endeavor, or is seen to be a potential endeavor. Recording reporting, just like any other aspects of scaling up PMPN, it's quite complex, but we need to standardize our information and data system, looking into the different records and reports that are properly available or made available to the different centers or to the different facilities that we have identified. And monitoring, supervision, and evaluation has also to be put into place, developing a monitoring and evaluation tool, but also conducting internal MSE as well as external MSE. And here, we still like to see the presence of GLC doing external MSE. So for the access for potential agencies for support, as I've said, the financial demand for PMPM is really great. And therefore, at this point in time, if we have opportunities, we have to access these opportunities for support. Government will be a good support because the national and the local government need to be put into the system for sustainability. Non-government agencies are also necessary, especially if they have the capacity, as well as the private sector in terms of them delivering services also. External assistance for technical and financial support through GFATM, USAID, WHO, And sorry, I missed here. JICA is seen also a very important support in terms of technical and financial assistance, particularly in the field of laboratory. So we're seeing here that if we have potential agencies, we need to access them to support our financial demand. And finally, we have to address the five dimensions of sustainability: political, technological, sociocultural, economic, and financial. The addressing of the sustainability should come in right from the very start because of course, the inherent problem of complexity in PMTM. And hopefully, once we address these four, we're actually now being able to address institutional sustainability. So this is going to be my last slide. I just want to share with you that in terms of the approach and impact relationship, which my colleague, Dr. Tupal, and I have discussed, we're seeing that if this were the triangle of all these MDR cases, and you still have that small tip there that represents this very fatal or lethal XDR-TBs. We'll be having also that portion that remains to be undetected if you don't try to catch them up. And therefore, in order to delimit or narrow these lines, we have to really look for MDRs and accord them or provide them with appropriate management. That's the impact that we'd like to see. Now, the approach perhaps is the next question. How do we do it? In the Philippines, as I've said, when we started it with a pilot, it only covers this much. So it will not create any impact if there's only this much of activity. We need to mainstream because we need to engage the public sector for, of course, sustainability and to also address the problems of complexity. But what is more important is once we mainstream, we need to replicate, expand it to a wider scale so that we'd be able to address this number of cases that we'd like to provide with appropriate management. And hopefully, if we try to get that, the Philippines would be able to contribute at least in terms of reducing MDR-TB cases locally and still internationally or globally. So that's how we approach it, the MMC DOTS Plus project being the pilot, LCP, the mainstream, and now we're going to PMTM, which is actually the scale-up process. So with that, I'd like to thank my Filipino colleagues here who are also here to support me. Maraming salamat.
Thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. You were so comprehensive that we have no more time for questions because we have one very interesting presentation to follow from Kenya, the experience of scaling up TB HIV activities. The floor is to Joseph Sitiene.
Thank you very much. I'm now bringing you to the experience that we have in Kenya in the scaling up of collaborative TB HIV activities. Oops. First, let me take you through the demographics of Kenya. The population is 33.4 million, with a case detection rate that is estimated by WHO in 2004 to be about 46%, with the incidence of TB in 2005, 108,401 TB cases notified, with a case notification rate of 325. The HIV prevalence in the KDHS of 2003 puts it at 6.7%, although this has been revised downwards, and the TB patients with HIV in 2005 was 57%. I'll take you through the TB HIV milestones and where we came from. In 1994, we had a seroprevalence survey which was conducted amongst the smear-positive TB patients in 17 districts of the country, and then we found that between 40 and 60% of the TB patients were dually infected, and therefore subsequently there were two attempts to really tackle the TB HIV issues in 1997 and 1998, although there was really nothing that came out of those two meetings where all the stakeholders and the TB and the HIV fraternity were invited. But in October 2004, the policy on HIV testing in clinical settings was released by the Ministry of Health, setting the pace, and in November of the same year, the National TB HIV Steering Committee was put in place where we have all stakeholders involved, and the chairman comes actually from partner. In January and June 2005, then we started actually a lot of activities to be able to move this agenda forward. The first one was the revision of TB data capture tools, printing and dissemination. When we revised these tools, we also incorporated TB and HIV data that I will be able to present to you a little bit later. We also started the development of the TB-HIV training curriculum because we realized there was need for this and there was a big vacuum. And we adopted the TB-HIV guidelines locally that were developed by the WHO. And we began the training of healthcare workers to be able to effectively and roll out this initiative. And with that, of course, we also moved to the next phase of setting up the provincial and the district TB-HIV steering committees. And by the end of 2005, actually, I would comfortably say that all the 10 provinces had active TB-HIV steering committees, and the provincial TB-HIV steering committees were active, and the district TB-HIV steering committees were in the formation stages. In 2005-2006, we moved to the next phase of training the regional TOTs, and the first training occurred in 2005, and the second one actually a few months ago, in 2006. And in October 2006, this year, we started printing of the TB-HIV training curriculum for widespread dissemination and use. Of course, for our success to move forward, what we realized was that there was a big need for training of the healthcare workers, because this was a new initiative that needed the healthcare workers to be focused and to know what was expected of them. And the TB-HIV steering, the TB-HIV curriculum that we developed with partners actually is in modular version and includes and captures practically everything from TB to HIV, including laboratory testing, converting the people who are going to undergo the training to be partly lab people, and eventually also the final one also captures recording and reporting tools so that they can effectively understand and also fill in those records properly. Of course, this became one of the Achilles heel, because without the trained and well-motivated staff, in terms also of numbers, it was not possible to roll out this. And of course, the other challenge which came with this is the infrastructure and the availability of funding for upward scaling up. Initially, we had thought that we are going to do this in only 30 districts as a pilot basis, but then it turned out that the demand was so huge that we had to roll it out in the whole country, and these are the findings. This slide actually shows you that we started sometimes in quarter three of 2005. This was after the distribution of the data capture tools and the initiation of training. And you can see from here that this is the percentage of the people who are reported, or the patients who are reported with the new recording tools. And these are the districts that kept being scaled up that were now being able to offer TB-HIV collaborative activities. And the first quarter of this year, we were at 100% in both the use and the districts that were using these tools. And this is how the scale-up went through, especially for the testing of TB patients for HIV. We started in the third quarter and we were testing about 32% of the TB patients. And this came up to about 59% by the end of the second quarter of this year. And our target, of course, is about 80%. This slide just shows you the trend of the HIV testing among the patients in terms of those who are offered testing and those who were actually tested. We started again in third quarter. We're only offering 62% of the patients, and this has since gone up to be about 100% by the beginning of this year. And as expected, the HIV seroprevalence has been declining all through, because as you increase the numbers, you also expect the number of those who test HIV positive to be going down. Initially, it stood at 60%, and of course, this could be because of several reasons, including, of course, the fact that those who are being tested were those that the healthcare workers felt strongly that may have been HIV positive. And you can see by the second quarter of this year, we are now at 53% of those TB patients tested found to be HIV positive. This graph just shows you the scale up within in Kenya and the provinces, the percentage of TB cases who are tested for HIV from third quarter to the second quarter of this year. And this is Kenya. You can see from third quarter we were somewhere there. and we've been increasing steadily the numbers of those who are being offered testing. Our target stands there, and it's only one province somehow within the whole country that has somehow tried to reach the target. The rest are closely following suit. This again is showing the percentage of those who tested HIV positive in the whole country and in the provinces. As expected, again, you can see in the country that this figure has moved down from 60% to about 53% where we are right now. And one of the provinces is actually leading, where we have more than, in some cases, even up to 70% of the TB patients are actually dually infected, with one province having very, very, very minimal HIV. But this is just a distribution of HIV amongst the TB patients in different provinces within the country. And this again shows you those who turned out to be HIV positive by type, those who are tested for HIV, and those who tested HIV positive. The red bar shows the ones who tested HIV positive. And as expected, of course, the relapse cases have more HIV cases, including those who are, in total, the ones who are on retreatment. And I think in children below 15 years who are PTB positive. These are the results we are finding. And amongst the total cases, 53% of the patients have dually infected. This is again showing you the male-female ratios over the years and over the quarters, sorry to call it years. And in fact, in the first time when we started the testing in third quarter 2005, there was a very minimal uptake amongst the men. But this has since increased, and you can see now more and more men are getting tested. Perhaps ladies accept new initiatives faster than men, I don't know. But this, the HIV prevalence among the TB patients in terms of age and sex, using the figures that we have for 2005, and you can see in all age groups, as expected, the females are more burdened by HIV and TB, and the males, of course, are less. But again, the highest concentration are within the sexually and economically active age groups. Overall, we have here where we have the males about just above 50% and females about 62%. And of course, with the testing of the patients for HIV, we had to create linkages, especially with the HIV program. And we have our own targets as NLTP. The first one is to make sure and ensure that at least 80% of the TB patients are tested for HIV, and to link 80% of those who turn out to be positive to COTRIM, and to ensure, of course, that 80% of these patients are on ARVs. These are our targets, and ensure at least 20% of the PLHAs are screened for TB. Well, somebody will ask why we have a low level for the PLHAs to be screened for TB. This is because this activity is undertaken in the ARV clinics, and we are still at the discussion level with our sister programs to ensure that practically all people living with HIV/AIDS who are started on ARVs are actually screened for TB. And you can see here from the third quarter to the second quarter of this year how this has changed through. In the first quarter, we had about 98% of those who turned out to be positive being put on CPT. And this has been changing as the numbers increase. But of course, the most striking is the linkages towards the HIV and especially the ARV program, that we are still at an extremely low level when we expect to have quite a big number of these patients to be put on ARVs. We are still not developed the necessary linkages. And right now, this is where we are. We are testing about 60% of our patients. We are moving on. We hope to get 80% by the end of the year. We have now linked more than 80% of the TB HIV patients to COTRIM. This is because this COTRIM is offered in the CHESS clinic, but we are still low as far as HIV is concerned. I would like to acknowledge the Ministry of Health, the NLTP staff at all levels, and of course the TB patients. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joseph, for this important report from Kenya. There's time for one or two questions.
Asudoro from KNCV. Thank you very much for your excellent presentation. The data you presented, does it include the prison system? And if not, how is the collaboration between two sectors? Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. The data I presented is actually aggregation of all the data of TB patients reported and recorded within the country. So it includes prisons, uniformed forces, all uniformed forces, practically including also the ones who are on PPM drugs.
So TB-HIV activities also on the prisons in
TB? Yes. Yes.
In the back. This is the last question, I'm sorry.
Right. Thank you very much. I'm from Musavi Jalo from the Gambia. Right, you talked of the issue of HIV testing, but all along I was also expecting to hear something that should precede the testing, because in my own country it's a sort of a condition precedent. We call it voluntary counseling, and it's a very big issue, and the HIV testing issue, in fact, is key. I don't know in your own country, because I believe you have very good success story compared to my own country in terms of testing. In my own country, because it has been preceded by voluntary counseling, the decline rate is very high, therefore reducing the rate of HIV tested patients. It's probably TB HIV. I don't know what happens at the other end. Do you counsel them first on voluntary basis, or do you just test them?
Thank you very much. Of course, I omitted that, but I'm sorry to have omitted that. What we do in Kenya is that the guidelines which were released in October 2004 for HIV testing in clinical settings have an implied meaning that all patients who go to the health facilities have, in a way, consented to be tested for everything, including HIV. But that does not mean that these patients are not cancelled. What we use is an opt-out approach. All patients are tested unless they decline to be tested. But in the context of the three C's, that is confidentiality, counseling, and consent, they have to consent for that to be done. So we do it, and this is one of the things that has created some bit of stress for us, because to offer confidential testing under the three C's, it means you need an extra room, and therefore maybe infrastructure needs to be revisited for purposes of offering this effectively. At the moment, our chest clinics are tiny, small, and in some cases inappropriate for offering the counseling, and therefore these are things we are growing up with, but we are doing as we learn. So we do that in the context of the three C's.
Thank you very much, Joseph. This ends a very interesting series of presentation this morning. This afternoon we continue at 2:15, and your chair will be Dr. Chan, the NTP program manager from India, is already waving, ready to take you through the afternoon. Thank you all very much.